Within the Northumberland Forest, there is a secret.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. That, of course, is our theme song. Joining me right now are Jim Ronson. He is the chair of the Port Hope Ratepayers Association. And Rob Washburn. He is a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. He is our regular contributor. The show, of course, is Consider This Live. Welcome to the studio, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hi.
Very glad to have both of you guys in here. Now, just before we went to the top of the hour, I read, folks, the outline of the Port Hope Ratepayers Association, the mission statement, as it were. That's pretty much what you guys are all about, is that right?
That's right. We want to hold the council to account. We want to hold the council to account in terms of what they're doing. We want to question their financial decisions, their political decisions, and see that they really are representing the town of Port Hope in a financially responsible manner.
When was the organization founded?
Our organization was founded in 2010, so prior to the last election.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you seeing a difference off the hop right now with this new administration compared to the last?
Complete sea change in the administration. Very, very remarkable difference. The previous council was very intransient. They were non-responsive, and they just weren't accomplishing what they should have. There wasn't that sense of the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Two former councillors, or two councillors rather, who were formerly had my position as chair of the Port Hope Ratepayers Association, got elected, and have now become councillors, and so they've carried on that tradition as well. The new mayor, Mayor Sanderson, has proven to be very popular. So while there has been a sea change in terms of the culture, in terms of the responsibility, there's still an awful lot to be done. I'm up there questioning councillors and the mayor on a weekly basis.
Has there been any concern by your association, though, about the access to this council? Because I know they have fewer council meetings and things like that, certain changes in the way they operate with the population. They seem to be a little more distant.
No, I wouldn't say that that's true. In fact, the optics at the very beginning, if you're familiar with the Port Hope Council, it's set up in a jury situation, like a trial room. So mm-hmm. Formerly, the mayor and the CAO used to sit up on top and look down on the audience and now the optics are such that the councillors are on the same level. They're set in a semicircle facing the audience, and so there's a certain amount of closeness there in terms of that. And I just think that things have gotten much better in terms of that. As to the streamlining that's taken place, it is true that there are only two meetings a month as opposed to four, mm-hmm. but it's become much more efficient. One of the things that they do is they have a lot of people, staff, background staff who are being paid to sit there and provide information to the councillors about questions or information to the council themselves. And so to have those people on hand for four meetings a week mm-hmm. wasn't really all that beneficial. So it's great to have just those two meetings. So the way that it's set up is that they have a council meeting followed by the committee of the whole. And so I don't think we've lost anything. We've increased the efficiency, but we haven't lost anything in terms of accountability.
Would you say the role then of the organization has gone from more adversarial to more advisory?
I think it has. Previous to this, Mayor Thompson mm-hmm. tried to build that bridge, but there wasn't the kind of trust relationship that there is between us and the present mayor and council.
Well, I wonder if that wasn't born out of your own genesis, because I mean, you guys were formed out of a sense of things had to change, and so you started off in an antagonistic sort of gear, and mm-hmm. I wonder if that wasn't part of the thing that contributed to the type of relationship that did develop, because there was a lot of animosity before the election.
I think that's fair to say, yes.
So what then for you guys in terms of those early years, what were the big issues that you were trying to face, and why was it so frustrating?
I think it was really frustrating that the council did not seem to want to respond. They didn't. They weren't listening to the people. People didn't feel listened to. It was people who had been on council for many, many years, and And it was fairly shoddy in terms of accountability, in terms of business plans, all of those things that we've talked about. They've begun to implement in the new council.
Could it be the incumbency that created the staleness in that government? Maybe because it'd been reelected over and over. We saw a number of people on that last council who'd been councillors for some time. Correct.
That's right. Yeah, only one councillor was reelected from the previous council. The rest were all defeated.
Mm-hmm. So it's definitely fresh. I mean, today was the first day, if you will, we've seen a brand new Liberal government, and there's all this joy and excitement about a brand new Liberal government. Was that sort of the way things happened after the last municipal election?
I would say that that's a fair comparison. Yes, there was a sense of hope, a sense of rejuvenation, a sense that things really had changed, that the people of Port Hope had rallied. And as I said, I called it a sea change, and it really was an important change.
Can I ask you if before the previous council, why was the communication so bad? Why was there so much animosity? I mean, you know, it takes two to dance. So where did the responsibility really lie in the fact that things got so sour?
Well, I think that there was a lot of defensiveness on the part of the council, an unwillingness to cooperate. They saw us as an opposition, a force of opposition, mm-hmm. rather than cooperation. It was only when they really started to get into trouble and they asked for our help in terms of communication. But by then, I think people had already made up their mind.
And when was that? When was that?
This was towards the just before the last election. They began. Mayor Thompson inaugurated some meetings with us, and they were having a great deal of communication difficulties. One of the huge issues in Port Hope was then and continues to be the area rating issue, that division between the rural and the urban communities. And they were looking for some help in terms of how to present that. But by then, they developed a lot of difficulty with that.
Well, on that note, we're going to continue the conversation. My guest in the studio is Jim Ronson. He is the chair of the Port Hope Ratepayers Association. Rob Washburn joining us, of course, for his weekly installment of Consider This Live. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. We'll be right back. And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. A little bit of a gap there for you, folks. Jim Ronson in the studio, the chair of the Port Hope Ratepayers Association, and Rob Washburn for our weekly installment of Consider This. Now, you were leading to a contentious issue just before we went to the break to talk about something. Because, again, you know, some issues that are still lingering from the previous council that are still a sort of a thorn even for this council. Are they addressing any of those concerns adequately, do you think? Let's talk about the difference, the disparity between the ratepayers in Ward 1 and 2, for instance.
I think that Ward 1 and 2, there continues to be some divisiveness between the two wards. What the mayor and the councillors have done is they formed a rural action working group. And this group is composed of councillors and mayors, as well as some people from the community, in the rural community, to begin to try and talk about some of the issues that the rural community specifically is facing. So they are going to take, and the council did promise to take another look at area rating, because that was and continues to be a contentious issue in terms of what constitutes a special service and what mm-hmm. constitutes a shared service. And so that is ongoing. One of the things that one of the questions that came up, for example, at last night's council meeting was the rural community would like access to internet. And so I posed the question, and I was told it was a fairly poignant question, is Port Hope Council in the is that part of their job, part of their mandate to provide that kind of service? And it got, mm-hmm. I think it got them thinking about that. As far as the area rating, yes, that's been promised, and that they would revisit that, and that's perfectly acceptable. The other thing that the rural group is looking for is a change in names. They're looking towards no longer being called Ward 1 and Ward 2. They would like a change in names, perhaps Hope. The Hope Ward, as well as the town of Port Hope. So we'll see what happens with that.
Isn't that kind of thing still, I mean, that's, they're still unwilling then to join into the municipality then. But I mean, by it's almost like a Quebec-Canada relationship between the two, if I could say. They don't want to be identified as Port Hope residents. They want to be identified as Hope Township residents within Port Hope. I mean, it seems a little odd to me that, you know, when they talk about how they want to be, you know, part of the municipality, and that they're talking about shared services and things like that. But by the same token, they don't seem to be willing. That's something that they seem to be fixated on, is the fact that they don't want to be Port Hope.
I think there's still some resentment from the past. I think that there are a lot of people in the rural community that are more forward-looking. So I think it's fair to say that there's a mix of people who have never gotten over the fact that the town was amalgamated and the two wards formed. And then there are others who are more open to that concept.
What is the relation? What is your role then as a ratepayers group with the rural portion of the municipality then?
Well, a lot of the meetings that this group has called, the Rural Action Group, they've invited Ward 2 people, and we've gone along as other people, spokespersons for Ward 1 as well, just to see that. The other thing that we have that's there's been an invitation by the mayor for one of our treasurer, who's quite well known in terms of his financial background, and he is sitting on the committee that's looking at the budget process.
How many members do you have, and how many of them would be from the rural ward?
We have over 200 households as members, and it's hard to say. I would say we used to have about 20 to 30. So definitely there's a lot more. We would love to have more people. We don't have one single board member from the second ward too. And so we would love to have more representation on that. It's been difficult to attract that.
Because I wonder then how it is. I mean, you promote yourselves as being representatives of all residents of Port Hope, which I would assume would be both rural and urban.
Yes.
And yet, if I'm hearing you correctly, that's really not the case. You are mostly loaded towards representing urban ratepayers.
Well, we continue to reach out to the rural community, and we want to achieve a balance between the two wards. So that is our goal. But it is fair to say that the representation is greater in terms of Ward 1 representation. But we would like to, you know, we would like to try and get away from this Ward 1, Ward 2, and just see it as one community that we can talk about.
You know, one of the issues that was a major issue, there's a lawsuit launched on behalf of the residents of the former Hope Township with regards to monies they received from the province. What's happened with that issue? Is that an issue, the Ratepayers Association for Port Hope? Is that something you guys are looking at as well? Because, I mean, that's a lot of money. There's still interest on that, from my understanding, is supposed to be going to those residents to offset rate increases, for instance.
Yeah, that remains an issue. It's very difficult for us as well as council to speak on it because there is a lawsuit in the process. So you have to be very careful from a legal point of view. That court case is scheduled to be, it's being constantly delayed, but it's scheduled to come up in December. So we do have to be very careful on that front.
How do you advocate, though? I mean, in a situation like that, who do you advocate for?
I'm not sure I understand.
I'm sorry. We're talking about an issue that's very important to them, is to get this financial issue resolved. So I know it's before the courts, and I know you can't comment on it from that standpoint of view. But as an advocacy group, which is part of, you know, to give voice to residents that you represent, where do you guys stand on that issue?
Well, we actually were looking at the mayor. One of the things that the mayor has done is he has put some of that interest money towards both Ward 1 and Ward 2. So he's tidied things up. In the past, the council has sort of used that money for various capital expenditures, et cetera, and it hasn't really gone to tax relief. So that was one of the things that he did in the last budget.
Is it reasonable, though, for that money to be shared among the Ward 1 residents as well as the Ward 2 when you consider that money is and was for Ward 2? I mean, Ward 1 got their share of money.
Ward 1 continues to get its share of money. There was an equal amount given to both wards.
No, I realize that. But when Ward 2 got their money, that's very soon after that, the town, Hope Township, disappeared, right?
Yes.
So that money was supposed to be put in a trust for those people. That was the understanding I had. It was supposed to be a trust, and whatever interest they got from the trust was supposed to be used to offset their rate increases as part of the amalgamation. But what you're telling me, though, is that that interest money is, in fact, being used to benefit all residents of Port Hope.
Yes.
With the resident, I mean, if I were a resident of Hope Township, I think I'd still be a little ticked off about that.
Well, except that the fact that, you know, that money that came, that went to Ward 1 was also used for all the residents of Port Hope. It's not just that money went into other ways. For example, if you look at the rural community, there are a heck of a lot more roads mm-hmm. in Ward 2. And yet that's one of the greatest expenditures for council is paving and maintaining roads. Now a lot of rural residents would complain that, you know, the state of the roads is not good in the rural community, but mm-hmm. that's an ongoing issue. So in the past, it has gone both ways.
Okay.
I'm curious, one of the things that you raised in your annual letter after the AGM was the county taxation. And I'm wondering if you could articulate for us what's got you so concerned about county taxation.
Well, that it's interesting you should ask that, because last night, the Ganaraska Association, the Conservation Authority, said that they wanted a 2.8% increase, that Port Hope would be responsible for that. One of the things that Mayor Sanderson has done is he's trying to work towards a zero rate increase, which was the case in the last budget. Now, of course, he had the advantage of that interest money to try and reduce it. So mm-hmm. Coburg certainly doesn't have that kind of advantage. But at the same time, he also sits on that council. And I spoke to the mayor last night, and I said to him, are you going to continue to press for accountability and possible tax reductions at the county level? And he said, yes, he would. So he would like to be out front on that, and we would like him to continue to do that.
Well, on that note, we're going to take our next break, and we will be right back with more of this conversation. My guests in the studio are Jim Ronson. He is the chair of the Port Hope Ratepayers Association. Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. He is our regular contributor. This is, of course, Consider This, part of the Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7, Canada's only holistic political chat. I'm Dave Glover. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Drive Time. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. We do have a caller online, so we're going to go right to that caller if we can. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave.
Oh, hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm okay. About the Ward 2 thing about and why they're so ticked off still.
Mm-hmm.
When Ward 2 became absorbed into Port Hope,
yes,
they had all new vehicles. They had zero debt. They had that money sitting in trust, earning interest for them. What else? And they were pretty much self-sufficient.
So it was just a rosy picture for them. Then they got sucked into Port Hope, and now they're in debt. Is this what you're getting to?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Because that's why they're ticked off, because their vehicles went to town and never came back, never to be seen again. From their trust money was taken.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they were ripped off. I have friends who were present for all of this stuff.
Sold a, so. I think the term I think you're referring to is sold a pig in a poke, really.
Here you go. Something a lot more pointed than that.
I'm just trying to be, you know, my usual disgustingly
correct?
Reasonable. Not necessarily politically correct, but disgustingly reasonable. So they were sold. They were told, you know, this is what's going to happen with amalgamation. Don't worry about that other stuff. And yeah, we know you just bought new vehicles, but don't worry about it. It's all going to be good. And then it turns out.
Well, who knows what they were told? I think they were told that you're going to become part of Port Hope, whether you like it or not, period.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like being told what to do,
mm-hmm. Well,
especially when it's a bad deal.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because they don't get all the same things that people in Port Hope get. You know, you got to go to town to get everything.
Well, yeah, that's...
They get garbage pickup. That's about it, right? The roads have gone for a complete crap since then. You can't even drive at 80 kilometers an hour out there anymore and it's all a liability issue. My brother works for Durham Region Roads.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the speed limit has been lowered. It's a liability issue. They haven't kept up
They're into the bargain.
They haven't. No, well, maintenance hasn't been done on the roads, and look at them.
Deb, this is Rob Washburn. I'd like to know, do you think people like Jim and his group, the Port Hope Ratepayers, are representing you? Because, I mean, that's their mandate.
I live in Hamilton Township. I just know about these things because, like I said, I have friends who live in Ward 2. So as far as what the other people are doing, I have no idea. I know what to get back to where they started from and why they were doing what they were doing. Mm-hmm. I think they pretty much accomplished what they set out to do. And sometimes you outlive your usefulness. And I don't want to be, you know.
Glib?
Well, yeah.
Let me ask you this, though. Do you think the group, the Concerned Citizens of Hamilton Township, are they a voice for you?
I have no idea what they're about.
Okay. Fair enough.
Honestly.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Well, we did have Al Hoffman in the studio, I guess it was two weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we are going to be getting him back again to talk about the Hamilton Township organization as well. And I know you're a regular listener, so you probably heard the first installment, but maybe not enough information for you, right?
No, actually, Dave, I've been so busy getting ready for November that I haven't been listening to the radio at all much. So it's just recently that I've sat down and...
All righty.
Well, in and back. So anyway.
Well, thanks. Thanks for the call.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
I wanted to let you know what my friends felt. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Deb.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Yep. Bye, guys.
All right. So that's Deb. Now, she lives in Hamilton Township, but she does have a number of friends. And that's pretty common in this area. I mean, I have people, friends of mine who live in Port Hope and vice versa up in Hamilton Township, even up in Haldeman. So, you know, it's just the nature of the writing. But I guess what she's saying or what she's alluding to is this idea that they really got short shrift on this amalgamation. We were amalgamating. There were supposed to be so many great benefits. There really weren't any great benefits. We went from being in the black to in the red. Our rates are continuing to go up. Where was the benefit for these Ward 2 residents to become part of the town?
Well, I think they did benefit from shared services and so on, and they will continue to benefit. It'll be interesting to see the outcome of this court case that is mm-hmm. going through. As I mentioned before, there's, for example, if you look at Ward 2, there a huge number of bridges there that would have to be. And if they were to, in fact, split off, as one group has advocated, they would have to put millions of dollars into those bridges mm-hmm. for ongoing structural repairs. And so it would be a significant challenge. There was some talk of Hamilton Township joining together mm-hmm. with the township in Port Hope. But mm-hmm. I don't think Hamilton Township really welcomed that idea. I'm not sure, but mm-hmm. That's my understanding.
Well, they do have tens of millions of dollars socked away in a fund that was created, so maybe they could use that money to fix their bridges. Now, you had some issues with regards to the county, though, that you wanted to get back to.
It just seemed to me that, again, that culture was, you know, automatic 2.5% mm-hmm. increases every year without a lot of question about it. And so what we would like to – we wanted to start at the council level, but what we'd like to see is – and that's the problem with county. What we would like to see is some more accountability there, but it's very, mm-hmm. very difficult to get accountability for people who you know, are not directly elected and don't really have to answer to groups such as ours mm-hmm. on a monthly basis in front of council as they do.
Well, I'm curious, too, because the county has been slowly over the last 18 months, 2 years, maybe even 5 years, if we go back, absorbing more and more responsibilities from the lower tier municipalities. So just in the last 2 weeks, they've taken over fire dispatch for a great part of the county. They have planning now is under their umbrella. They've had for quite a while economic development and tourism. Now, how do you feel then about this slow migration of services that really hasn't had a lot of public discussion? Has your group been active in talking about these kinds
certainly
of transfers?
Certainly, the dispatch situation with the firefighters, we welcome that, but there certainly all of the communities are putting money towards that. It's not like the county is starting from zero there. The community itself is doing that.
That fascinates me because every time we've talked about amalgamation of police services, everybody gets very righteous and very much wants to keep everything homegrown and within the individual municipalities. And yet you seem to welcome, at least for fire services, a common dispatch.
I would welcome that with the police. In fact, I brought that up with Greg Burns, our deputy mayor, that there needs to be less... more cooperation between the police services. Mm-hmm. I think we could save a lot more money and have a lot better efficiency and perhaps even have a more safe – a safe county in terms of dispatch if the police were to go that route. But unfortunately, there's that ongoing history of animosity between Cobourg and Port Hope.
But the police services have amalgamated their communications, though. Port Hope and Cobourg have amalgamated their communication services.
Oh, that's
through Owen Sound, if I remember correctly.
All right.
They needed a third-party intervention, but they managed to do that. Yeah. So, I mean, that sort of goes to, I think, the point you were making, though, that it doesn't make any sense. Like, why is this constant back and forth? You know, and we went through a number of studies over the last decade where Port Hope was making an approach to Cobourg and vice versa. And there was always, you know, in Cobourg, we were told Port Hope doesn't want to do it. In Port Hope, they were told Cobourg doesn't want to do it.
Yes.
It really does beg the question, then, if it seems the population want to do it, who is it in these particular municipal governments that just don't want to do it?
And I would say those are the bureaucrats that are protecting their fiefdoms. That's part of the problem. Robert brought up a good point when he talked about the fact that at county they seem to be taking more things on,
mm-hmm.
But we as citizens are ultimately paying for those things as well.
Absolutely.
Do you feel that we're moving towards, whether slowly or quickly, an abolition of the lower tier municipalities and having one regional government?
I'm not sure I would go quite that far.
Why not?
In terms of what I think is happening, or
no? Why wouldn't you be?
I don't think regional government is particularly efficient.
In what way?
I just think that, again, there's less accountability. The nice thing about having a municipal level is the accountability that we can bring. As soon as you take that farther and farther away from the citizens and groups like ourselves, there's less and less accountability, and that's become the problem at the county level. I think a regional government would see similar, if not worse, a worse situation.
Do we need maybe an amalgamation of ratepayer associations to go to the county?
As a matter of fact, that's a good question, because Lydia, who is the president of the Cobourg Taxpayers Association, one of her mandates and one of our mandates is to attend those meetings and to cooperate on that front.
One of the things you mentioned earlier that I'm really interested in is the sea change that you talked about between the previous council and the current council. And earlier you mentioned that two of your former presidents or chair people from your group got elected. How does it now to be a watchdog to people who you've sat around a table with and are friends with? And
It's interesting you should ask that, because I just referred to the fact that I asked some pretty difficult questions of Terry Hickey, our former chair, last night at the mm-hmm. council meeting. So certainly I continue to question him and everybody else that are making their decisions.
And how would you have assessed his performance last night as you asked him these tough
questions? Well, he did come back and said to me, oh, good question. It got, you know, it did get me thinking. So I think he answered it as well as he could, but I thought that it was an interesting challenge on my behalf.
When do you think the honeymoon's going to end between yourselves and the council?
I don't think there was necessarily a honeymoon situation. They gave us 60. We gave them 60 days to put together a budget, and we'll continue to question their budgetary decisions. One of our ongoing concerns is the lack of money going into reserves. They put no money into reserves in the last budget. Now that we put some pressure on them, I think that they've gone up to. The finance person showed me that they are going to have an increase of approximately 2.8%.
Have you been following Deputy Mayor John Henderson in Cobourg has introduced a new method of coming to a budget with a number of new public meetings. Have you been following that process at all?
I haven't, but certainly that's the history in Port Hope.
Okay, so I was just going to say, are you thinking of adopting any of these kinds of approaches to get it more open and more transparent? And do you think that's necessary in Port Hope?
I think that's already the case in Port Hope.
Okay. The other thing I was curious about is yourselves and a Facebook group called Port Hope Politics. Could you maybe, because they seem to do a lot of advocating and discussing of political issues in the area. What's the relationship between you guys and the Facebook group?
I myself don't participate in Port Hope Politics. It can get pretty nasty, pretty personal, and kind of petty in a way. So when I have it, when I have something to say, as I did last night, for example, I was I put it out on our own website. I pointed out that I spoke to Terry Hickey, the Councillor Hickey, and because it hadn't really been advertised that there was not going to be an appointment of a new CAO, saving the Port Hope ratepayers in general, not our association, $126,000 a year. And basically this person, the former CAO, has not been missed. So it's pretty remarkable.
Does the town, do you not need a CAO at the municipal level?
It appears not.
Well, I mean, what's not getting done?
I don't think there's an awful lot that isn't getting done. I think that they've discovered that position was essentially redundant, and that in fact it was again a bureaucrat who was controlling a lot of the staff, and the staff were intimidated by that person, as were some of the other councillors, etc. So I think that there's been a culture change there, and really the person hasn't been missed.
Isn't it mandated though? I mean, municipalities not mandated
no.
to have a
GP? No, they're not.
They're not. Okay.
No.
So let me ask this though. I mean, sometimes we have all experienced this in our employment, where people above you and below you get taken away, and all of a sudden you've got 10 extra things to do for your job. I mean, has there not been this kind of shift then within the municipality, where people are being overburdened by having to compensate for the fact that there is no CAO?
It doesn't appear to be. In fact, I think that there's a better relationship now between staff and council, and council are perhaps taking over some of those responsibilities. In reality, in the past, it was staff that was running the municipality. Now I really do believe that it's the mayor and the council that are running the ship.
So what hard evidence do you have then, other than just impressions? Do you have any hard evidence that it's improved or better working, or that works equal and not burdensome?
I can't speak to that. I think you would have to talk to Mayor Sanderson or some of the other councillors, because I'm not that familiar with the inner workings between staff and council. I'm just talking generally my observation that the absence of the CAO has really had very little effect and has saved the town a great deal of money.
Well, I find that fascinating, because here in Coburg, of course, the big concern in the last couple of municipal elections, even the one that just passed, was the fact that, or this perception rather, that staff was sort of driving the council, that it was the staff that was making the decisions. And most of those decisions were in fact being made by the CAO and the CFO. Those are the ones who were, so council was almost ancillary, almost you know, a token representatives for the municipality. That is clearly what happens in a lot of municipalities. I mean, if you look at Toronto, ratepayers are saying the same thing over there. It seems staff's got the wheel. Are you saying that what's happened in Port Hope is council's taken back control of the vehicle?
Exactly.
I got to wonder, though. I often say this when we talk about this issue, is that I think sometimes the civil service gets a very raw deal in the eyes of many people, and they don't really understand the role and how that functions. Staff does what politicians tell them to do, and good staff does that. Now, I can't speak for every instance, or, you know, I'm sure there are specific examples where maybe that doesn't happen. But I sometimes think it's wrong to place the blame always on the feet of the civil service, because they're only doing what they're instructed to do. And when politicians sit back and let them take control, they will take control, because they've got to make sure that the municipality runs. But I think if politicians are strong and are clear in their guidelines, and it sounds to me like this is what's going over in Port Hope, then the staff know what to do and they get the job done. And I think that's how that works. And I think sometimes politicians and citizens have a very misguided view of the role that they do. And oftentimes, you know, it can be very the animosity can be very great between citizens and the civil service, and I don't always think that that's
no. Deserved. I think that's a fair comment. I mean, we weren't questioning what the staff were doing. If they're given that kind of responsibility, they're going to take it on. One of the things, for example, one of the things that the new council is celebrating is the hiring of a new communications director, and she has really helped in terms of getting out the message to both council as well as the citizens of Port Hope.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, the real issue is communications. I mean, you know, the perception by many municipalities, including our very own here in Coburg for a long time, was that staff was running the show. And the biggest reason for that was because we weren't getting information. We weren't getting information on what studies were being done, who was paying for those studies, what was the result of that study, because a lot of that information was being sat on. Now, that was determined to be a political decision for the most part by previous councils, but it was the staff who had to bear the brunt of that. It was the staff that had to take the heat from the public going, oh, I can't believe we paid for this. Like, what is the staff doing? And so, and I think we, to your point with regards to what Mr. Henderson's doing, I mean, he's having a full-on, if you will, staff meeting, but inviting the public there to not necessarily engage. I believe you can send in written submissions, but you can't actually engage from the floor. But it's the first time that in Coburg anyway, that I can remember, or that even people like Ben Burt can remember, where this type of process has been opened up. I mean, even the staff said, so the public are going to be there? And he said, yeah. And their response was, well, we never did that before. And he said, well, that's part of the problem. It's communication.
Well, I just wrote about this today in the newspaper in my column about if you go back to late 80s and early 90s, this was the way it was done. It was done in a regular council meeting. Everybody put their wish list out. It was very public. You know, sometimes there was talk of increases being, you know, 15% in the budget. And everybody would go, what? And then all of a sudden, everybody would sit down with a sharp pencil and boom, it'd be get down to a more reasonable level. I'm also curious, though, ratepayer groups are often famous for saying zero increase in budgets. And we talk a lot about that. But I wonder, what is it we're really after? Are we just after responsible spending? Or are we really gone past the time of zero increases? I mean, is that really realistic for a municipality anymore?
Well, as I said, the present council in Port Hope did achieve that zero situation, but they, of course, had the interest money at hand. Also, Port Hope seeing a little bit of growth. And so because of that 2.8, somewhere in there, that growth rate in Port Hope, they are able to expand the tax base. But both Coburg and Port Hope suffer from fairly high taxes. So it's not surprising that there's been taxpayers groups develop in both places.
Mm-hmm. But is it really fair to continue to go back and ask for zero increases when industry is not opening, and that in the industrial part of the tax base has been diminishing? Is it really fair to ask for a zero increase when people's jobs are changing and more people are obtaining precarious labor rather than full-time labor? I mean, the economy is shifting. Is it still fair to be coming back and saying zero increase?
I think it is fair. Yes.
Why?
I just think that if people are given that kind of goal to try and achieve it, then they will. If it's going to be an automatic 2.5% or 3%, it's just expected, then there's no indication that they will. So if you take it to staff and you say on a department-by-department basis, we want you to find ways to save that money and to bring it down to zero, it's amazing what people can do when they're given that baseline. But if you don't lower the bar or raise the bar, as you have, you're not going to get what you're looking for.
Okay, but we're seeing how that's playing out with, for instance, Northumberland Hills Hospital, right? I mean, their mandate from the Lynn, no increases.
Yes.
Right? We know that they've had a group go in there and do a full financial review. As far as I know, the last report I heard anyway, was they said that the hospital's already running as bare bones as they possibly can, but they're going to need to find more money. Eventually, a municipality is going to hit that point as well, where you're running as lean as you possibly can, but people are still expecting services. So in order to maintain that zero increase, now you're cutting into services or adding user fees. Is that what we're going to see?
I don't think you're going to necessarily have to add user fees. I think given the growth of Port Hope, as long as Port Hope continues to grow, as long as that money continues to be applied from the interest from the federal government, that they should be able to continue in that vein. Certainly the present council was not afraid to let people go in terms of jobs. And you don't want to let people go in terms of jobs. You spoke about the importance of the civil service. But on the other hand, I gave a pretty prime example of the CAO's position being dispensed with, saving the taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. So these things could be grandfathered, but at the same time, I don't think this council has been afraid to let people go, and I don't think they should be in the future.
I find that really interesting because I wonder sometimes if the rhetoric around this is starting to, you know, we've been listening for, well, since Mike Harris in the early 90s about zero increases. And I just wonder, you know, what services are we giving up and you know, what are we going to lose? And is it really a thorough analysis being done to say that, you know, these things, I mean, as you said yourself, it looks like we don't need a CAO. But what are the hard numbers? What is it? You know, talk to the civil servants. How are they finding it to do the job? And let's get a real picture before we go, you know, well, we don't really need this or we don't really need that. And I think there's a lot of services that are like that. They get put up on the block and, you know, are we going to lose the library? Are we going to lose the, snow plowing or, relief pickup or whatever it is? I don't know. But I just wonder sometimes if we're so anxious to cut to zero, whereas maybe it's not about 2.5 or 3.5 or zero. It's about let's spend our money wisely and let's use tax dollars sanely.
Certainly that's a part of it, but I do think that you have to have that bottom line. Mm-hmm. And when the library, for example, in Port Hope was asked to come up with zero, they did come up with zero. There was some talk of cutting hours, and people didn't really like that. So, of course, mm-hmm. the council listened to the people. So there has to be input from the public.
But what was lost? That's what I want to know.
There was nothing lost. There was nothing lost through that.
So it would be safe to say then the goal should always be a zero increase.
I would say.
But if it can't be achieved, then there needs to be clear explanation outlining communication to the general public, to the ratepayers, of why that achievement was not achieved.
I think that's fair.
Okay, so we have a caller online. We're going to take that call. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
I am well, and you?
Just excellent, thanks.
All right, I just wanted to make a bit of a comment there. Yeah, you do remember that was a forced amalgamation.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Between Ward 1 and Ward 2.
I don't think there was an amalgamation in the province at the time that wasn't forced.
Yeah, so, I mean, you go in with a shotgun wedding,
mm-hmm.
things go wrong. You know, like, it's, Ward 2 was, it was well-run. It had, it was...
Well, they were in the black, apparently.
Yeah,
a bunch
basically,
of new vehicles.
They did a really, they did a really good job. Now, they got, forced to amalgamate,
mm-hmm.
so money was supposed to be put aside. And you talk about the CAO, or whatever you want to call them, that's not there now. That's where the spending was. That's where their money went and whatnot was on whims that, weren't there, that shouldn't have been done.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get a forced amalgamation, of course people are going to be upset,
Okay, so what do you think should have been done? Should they split apart and renegotiate? Should they come up with a prenup? What do they need?
Well, that should have been done before.
Yeah, but Harris didn't care about that.
That's
right. It didn't happen in Toronto. It didn't happen in Hamilton. It didn't happen in Essex.
The council that we had in Port Hope there was supposed to be stuff done every year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whether it was a bit of a tax increase or whatever it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be done every year. And unfortunately, the councils that we had previous just kicked everything ahead. They didn't make decisions. They didn't, I don't know whether they didn't want to upset the apple cart in Ward 2. I'm not sure what the deal was in that respect. So it got kicked ahead, till finally they're going, okay, now, you got to have this rate increase,
mm-hmm.
because it hasn't been happening all along. So who do you blame for that? Do you blame the council?
Yeah.
They didn't make decisions. That's how we had problems with the REM project.
That's how
we had problems with
And this
the
is
cop,
the problem with governing by popularity, though, right? I mean,
the
council was so worried about getting reelected. They wanted to be popular.
Yeah.
And by the same token, they were, to use a word, crap in the bed. They, you can only kick it down the road so long. Eventually, you don't have any road left, right?
That's right. Ed. You talk about the cops. I don't think most people would have a problem amalgamating the cops with mm-hmm. Coburg and Port Hope, wherein the problem is, the big problem in Port Hope was the OPP.
Right.
Okay?
Yes.
It was a different thing. If you were to, say, propose a, like a Durham Region police force sort of deal here,
mm-hmm.
I don't think they would get into the major kerfuffles that they have, but that particular thing is always off the table.
Ed, I have a question for you. Are you a member of the Port Hope Ratepayers Group?
No, I'm not.
Why not?
Because at the time when the Port Hope, and now this was just my feeling, okay, I had my own issues when the Port Hope Ratepayers Group was formed,
mm-hmm.
and I fully support the Port Hope Ratepayers Group, but when I went to council meetings and when I went to the other places, they had their issues, I had my own issues. And I didn't want to, get the two mixed up. So that's the only reason I fully support the things that they do and whatnot. But it's just like I say, I've got my own issues and things that I do that I'm not sure, you know, if somebody says, okay, we already heard from that group,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So Jim can count on you for a membership tomorrow, eh?
Membership has privileges, Jim.
Membership
apparently.
Has privileges, yeah.
I want to thank you for your call, Ed. You made some pretty good points.
Yeah,
appreciate
talk to you
it.
Later.
Well, my guest in the studio is Jim Ronson. He is the chair of the Port Hope Ratepayers Association, also Rob Washburn. You have been listening to this week's installment of Consider This. This is a program we run every Wednesday where we try and focus on municipal issues for the most part. Jim, I want to thank you for being here. You've been a great guest, a lot of fun, actually, and I appreciate your candor. Rob, as always, I want to thank you, listeners, as well, for tuning in to Northumberland 89.7. This is The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. This is Canada's only holistic political chat, folks, right here. We are out of here, and I will be back tomorrow. So you have yourselves a great evening.